When you are prepared, when you have a great foundation, you will present with power. You will become persuasive. It's not a time to wing it and guess and hope that it works out. Top presenters, top persuaders are prepared. They have a structure. They know what to do in the first 5 minutes, the first 10 minutes. They know about their call to action. They know when and when they should not use visual aids. Preparation is one of the major keys to your success. The first thing you need to do before you even get started with your presentation is define your goal. What is your main objective? What is it that you want the audience to do? Are you there to persuade? Sometimes presentations are there to amuse, to educate, to train, to enlighten, maybe. All of the above. But you need to know exactly what is your desired outcome. And that's what we call the call to action. This is the first thing you think about. This is the first thing you prepare. You do the end first. You do your call to action. You do what they call the close. Again, what exactly do you want your audience to do? Now, understand, there's a few challenges we see as we monitor persuasive presentations. The first thing it needs to be is easy to follow. It needs to be brainless. It needs to be something they can see themselves doing. You need to make it quick and painless. This is a small part of your presentation. It shouldn't surprise them. Your call to action's integrated throughout your whole presentation. So when you finally ask them to do something, when you finally ask for their credit card, when you finally ask for money, it doesn't surprise them. You have prepared them all the way through your presentation. One of the things we see as we talk to your audience is that when you go into your call to action, your demeanor changes. This is what I mean. You're talking to the audience, you're having fun, you're doing it, and then all of a sudden, the very end, the moment you need to ask them for something, the moment you're really trying to persuade them, you get a little nervous inside, you're not quite sure if you want to ask their money, are they ready, what if they say no, and your demeanor, your outlook, your presence tends to change. And that subconsciously is freaking out your audience. Who's the real person here? Why did they change? We were having so much fun. Now they're all serious. What's going on? Don't change demeanor. Again, you're persuading all the way through your presentation. Isn't that what they say in sales, ABC? Always be closing. And this call to action should be so easy and so fast that your audience naturally wants to do it. Like that old gentleman, he neglected his teeth. They didn't want to go to the dentist. His teeth were hurting. And finally, he pulled himself to the dentist. He couldn't bear the pain. And the dentist says, you know, you've waited too long. We need to pull the tooth. He says, pull the tooth? I can't afford that. How much does that cost? He says, it's going to run you about $300. The old man said, $300 to pull a tooth? Are you kidding me? That's highway robbery. How long does that take? The dentist says, oh, I can do it in about 5 minutes. And he says, $300 for 5 minutes? Are you kidding me? And the dentist just smiled and said, well, if it's the time you're concerned about, I can take as long as you want. And that's where a lot of rookie and average persuaders get caught, is they just kind of extend it. They delay the inevitable. They procrastinate instead of doing it in a quick, easy, painless, and seamless way. This is where you define yourself as a persuader instead of a presenter. This conclusion, this call to action should not shock your audience. It should not surprise them. Throughout your presentation, you should have gently led them to the same conclusion that you are now giving them. You should have already prompted them to want to do what you're about to tell them to do. This should be the funnest part of the presentation. This is what your presentation is all about. This is the reason you are there. And your audience understands that. The whole presentation should be structured around this call to action. And make sure during your presentation you get permission to persuade. You prepare your audience for this conclusion before you get there. Once again, your entire presentation should be built around this call to action. Write the call to action first. I even recommend sometimes doing it word for word. Now, I'm not a big fan of scripts, but this is so important, you might want to start out with a script so you know exactly step by step what you need to do. And be eager, get to the point. Be positive, be enthusiastic, and make sure your conclusion is so explicit they don't have to guess what you want them to do. You need to tell them what to believe. You need to draw the conclusion for them. There should be no doubt in your audience's mind what exactly you want them to do. I know I'm hitting this point hard, but this is so important, and a lot of people miss this point. They're so concerned about other things within the presentation, they forget the reason they're there. You're there to ask them for business. You're there to get money. You're there to get a credit card. Whatever it is, you're in persuasion mode. Don't neglect the most important thing. With that in mind, let me give you a system. Let me give you the structure of a persuasive presentation. Now, I talked about the last one first, the call to action. But let me give you all five in order so you can understand a system. Remember, a system is almost more important than knowledge, step by step by step. Most failures is not a failure of necessarily knowledge. They didn't have a system to apply that knowledge. So let me give you a system, a proven structure that works. So there's five of them. Just real quick. Number one, create interest. Number two, state the problem. Number three, offer evidence. Number four, present the solution. Number five, call to action. Now, if you're scrambling to write those down, hold on. I'm going to repeat those as we go through this step by step. So number one, create interest. You have to generate an interest about your chosen topic. Your audience needs a reason to listen. Why should they care? What's in it for them? How can you help them? A message that starts with a really good reason to listen will grab the attention of the audience, enabling you to continue with the message. Without this attention, there is no hope of getting your message across. To grab their attention. If they're not listening, you can't persuade them. Create interest. You have 30 seconds to do this. Number two, state the problem. Remember, as persuaders, you are problem solvers. You're there to solve a problem. What are most people interested in? What are businesses interested in? Making money or saving money is always the top of the list. So, state the problem. You must clearly define the problem you are trying to solve. The best pattern for a persuasive speech is to find a problem and relate how it affects the audience. In this way, you show them a problem they have and why it is of concern to them. Why is this a problem to your audience? How does a problem affect them? This is where you build a little of the pain. If they continue and change nothing, where is this problem going to take them? If their challenge is lack of money, where is that going to take them? Bankruptcy? Not spending enough time with their children? Going to a job that they hate? You can make a long list of reasons. Remember, you are a problem solver. Number three, offer evidence. This is the support you give to your argument. Remember, you have something to gain as a persuader, so you're going to need some outside evidence, outside resources to give you more credibility. You are able to, and you need to, borrow the credibility of other people. If your credibility is not where it needs to be, if they've never seen you before, if you have something to gain, you have to borrow the credibility of somebody else, a statistic, a study, any type of evidence. You see, evidence validates your claims and offers proof that your argument is right. It allows your audience to rely on other sources besides you. What can you use? What evidence can you find? Remember, anything, like an example, a statistic, stories, testimonies, analogies, anything that can support you, that can be used to enhance the integrity and congruency of your message. Number four, present the solution. You've stated the problem, you have the evidence. You're there to give them a solution. You can solve their problems. You can solve their challenges. You have gained your audience's interest and provided evidence in support of your message. Now you must solve their problem. You present the argument you want them to believe and satisfy the need you have identified or created. You have to create dissonance. Remember dissonance? Dissonance is how you create internal pressure, how you get other people to persuade themselves. If you haven't mastered the law of dissonance, refer to maximum influence. So as you created this dissonance, you're providing a solution. How can your product meet their needs and wants and help them achieve their goals? And number five, call to action. A persuasive message is not true persuasion if your audience doesn't know exactly what you want them to do. Be specific. Be precise. They must take action. This is the climax, the peak of your logic and emotion. The prescribed actions must be feasible. And remember, easy. A confused mind says no. And this is a point that you're creating energy and enthusiasm and excitement. We've talked about this. Your enthusiasm or lack of enthusiasm is contagious. When you get to your call to action, you want people to jump up, run to the back, run to the front, whatever you do. Create so much excitement, and your audience will love this when you do it the right way. It creates energy in the air. I remember once I was giving a presentation, a couple hundred people in the room, and I was doing a preliminary call to action, and I wanted people to run to the front of the room to pick up something that was worth, I don't know, it was worth $100 or so. It was worth about $100, somewhere around there. And I was just demonstrating that those that took action, those that didn't worry about what other people thought, the first ones at the front of the room would get this prize. And I talked about it, and the people in the front always are the first ones to jump up because they don't have to run as far. But someone two rows from the back jumped up. You could see it in his eyes. He wanted it. He started running to the front. and he fell over and rolled. And to my dismay, his artificial leg rolled away from him. And I don't know the politically correct thing to do in this situation, if you pick up the leg and hand it back to them, or if that's something personal you don't touch. But the thing that amazed me as I was wondering what to do in the situation is the person completely forgot their leg and was crawling to the front of the room to get this prize. That's energy. That's excitement. And of course, he had a great sense of humor. We had a great laugh. He put his leg back on, and I gave him the prize just because he was so determined. He was so excited. And that's the state of mind you want your audience in during your call to action. So that's your structure. Create interest, state the problem, offer evidence, present the solution, and your call to action. Again, even though the call to action is last, you are doing it first. You are constructing a perfect persuasive presentation. So let me give you a few more ideas as you build this, as you construct this, as you think about a presentation that will knock the socks off your audience, that will create so much energy they will beg for your product or service. And as you construct this, there's a couple things I want you to remember. This presentation should be able to go 30 minutes. This presentation should go a couple hours, the same presentation. It's almost like an accordion. And you need to be able to customize this presentation to any audience. The way you would speak to stockbrokers is different than chiropractors, which is different than real estate agents, which is different than network marketers. And as great persuaders say, great presenters say, they give the same potatoes, they just change the gravy. So here are a few things to think about. First of all, when it comes down to your call to action, you have to understand that most people need options. We also see this with a trapped burglar or even trapped animals. Recently, I saw a young moose get surrounded by people who wanted a picture of it. Feeling trapped, this moose charged at the people in an attempt to escape. This type of scenario can present itself in your persuasive presentations. Some people want options, two or three different things they can choose from. If you don't offer options to your audience, they could attempt to charge and escape because they are forced into one thing. The strategy is, as a persuader and as a presenter, you have control over the options. As a great presenter and persuader, you only give them options that will satisfy your situation. And we have all done this with children. Do you want to finish your dinner or go to bed early? In sales, they call this strategy the alternative close. For example, have you heard the line? Do you want it regular or green? Or how about, do you want to meet Monday afternoon or Tuesday evening? The person has options, but both options meet the persuader's goals. Even if it's something simple, people need to have the autonomy to make their own decision, to have options. I heard a story of one lady who desperately needed to take her medication or she would die. Her doctor, her nurse, her son, and her husband all tried her to get her to take her medication, but to no avail. The doctor insisted she had to take the medication first thing when she got up in the morning, but she wouldn't do it. Distraught, the family took her to a new doctor. The doctor immediately saw the situation and talked to the patient. He explained the benefits of taking the drugs and how it could help her. Then he gave her an option. He said, "You need to take this once a day. Would you like to take it with breakfast or your dinner?" The patient smiled and said she would like to take it with her dinner. After she made that decision, she no longer gave people a hard time about taking her medication. The key is that both options the doctor gave her were fixed to achieve the same goal. If you absolutely have to limit your audience's choices to one thing, you must explain to them why there are limitations to their options. If your audience understands why a limit has been put on their freedom, they are more likely to accept it without feeling undermined. Now, on the flip side, try not to give your audience more than two or three choices. Conventional wisdom suggests that the more options you have presented to your audience, the more likely they are to find something else they like better. The opposite is also true. If you give too many alternatives, your audience will be less likely to choose any of them. Structured choices give your audience the impression of control. As a result, they increase in cooperation and commitment, and they're much easier to persuade. Here's an example. I was working with the stockbroker, and he wasn't very good during his presentations. The one-on-one call to action, asking for their business. He'd have initial encounter, initial presentation, and he says, "Come back in 3 days, and I'll come up with some options for you." Now, we know there's thousands of mutual funds out there, and he wanted to recommend some mutual funds. So we do research, and he would narrow it down to the 47 mutual funds that would fit for this prospect. 47? And then the person was supposed to choose out of the 47? That's too much for our brain to handle. I said, "No, 3 to 5. And when he did that, that dramatically changed the number of people that came on board to hear his financial advice. Think about it. perfume. You start smelling 7, 8, 10 perfumes. You forget which smelled better. You have to limit it to 2 or 3. The studies show this time and time again. And while you're thinking about structure, you have to think yourself, what is your main idea? What is your theme? Themes throughout a presentation go a long way. I mentioned Jerry Spence earlier, a trial lawyer. He would always have a theme. There was an insurance company that was being sued because they wouldn't pay out for a certain accident. His theme was corporate greed versus individual need. Or another large corporation was getting sued for breach of verbal contract. His theme was, let's put honor back in the handshake. And of course, the infamous O.J. Simpson trial, the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. So think of a central idea, think of a theme, and can you do this in the time frame allotted? Another thing that will increase your ability to persuade is repetition. Now, I didn't say repeat, I said repetition. You should say the important thing 2 to 3, maybe even 4 times throughout your presentation, but repackage it. You can say the same thing in 2, 3, 4 different ways. Because when you have repetition, it increases awareness, understanding, and retention. So as you design your presentation, you want to repeat the important points 2, 3, maybe even 4 times. Let's continue with the structure. The beginning of the speech, the introduction. This is about 10% of your presentation. What is your goal? Well, you need to get to the point fast, and you need to be concise. Your goal during this introduction is to capture their attention, establish credibility and goodwill, and reveal the topic of your speech. After the first minute, they shouldn't guess what you're speaking on. And this is a time to be very creative. Remember, you're going to capture their attention. Attention spans at an all-time low. You're getting around 12, 13 minutes where people can really focus and concentrate. And as I interview different audiences, they say they're going to give you 1 to 2 minutes max before they decide whether they're going to listen to you or tune out. And this is not a time to say, today I'm going to speak on, or today's topic is. You need to be a little more creative than that. They should know in a creative, fun, interesting, exciting way what you're going to be talking about. You are going to reveal the what's in it for me right in that first minute. Your introduction next to your call to action is the next most important one. You need to have this 10% down perfectly. Why? It gives you confidence. It gets you a good start. It gets things rolling. When you're prepared, you're not going to have fear. The fear goes down. So if there's 2 things you're going to practice, it's going to be your intro and your call to action. And those are the things that people remember the most. The primacy and recency effect. When you look at presentations, they either remember the beginning the most or the end. It is never the middle. And to review, what are you going to do? A startling fact to grab their attention? A personal experience? An incredible story? A question that gets them thinking? How are you going to reveal their pain? Is it a quote or maybe a fact? Test these out. Talk to people on the phone. You can test these things out. You can tell what's going to grab someone's attention. Now, let's talk about the conclusion. This is only 5% of your whole presentation because you've been persuading the whole time. You don't need that much time. And of course, it signals the end of their speech, which gets people to sit up and listen a little bit more. And you've already asked yourself, what do you want them to do? Now, this is a time to summarize main points, reinforce your central idea, and the best type of close or conclusion is emotional. This is not a time to say, oh, my time's up, that's it, I'm out of time, I gotta go. This is a time where they know you're finishing up. When you finish your speech, it shouldn't surprise anybody. They know you're getting ready to end. Remember, this brings in their attention, and they listen a little bit more. What are the best type of conclusions? Humor works well in this situation. A story, dramatic statement, a quote. Similar to an introduction, things that are very memorable. What can you do at the very end so they remember your message and it's easy for them to understand what you want them to do? Pretty simple. Not, well, let's summarize what I talked about. Today we talked about, in conclusion. Those are overused. You can say it in such a way where you don't have to use those words. Another thing you need to prepare ahead of time in this very visual world is visual aids. Yes. Every presentation should include visual aids, especially face-to-face. And if you notice with webinars and teleconferences and people over the phone, they're adding the visual elements because it increases persuadability. So visual aids make it easier to persuade, easier to understand. It increases retention, it increases credibility, and it attracts your attention. Wow, all from a visual aid. And it's interesting when you look at the visual side of human nature and the retention that visual aids bring, that visual aids increase retention by 25 times. When you repeat the information, as you notice I'm doing it in these audios, I'm repeating information, very important information in strategic places, that is for retention. Even though your mind says, yeah, I've heard that, it increases retention because your mind is saying that. When you say something one time, you have a 10% chance of your audience remembering it. When you say it six times in different ways throughout your presentation, that goes up to 90%. Repetition, visual aids, all critical in the design of your message. Because we know that people remember 20% of what they hear, 30% of what they see, 50% of what they see and hear, and 80% of what they see, hear, and do. The more you can get them involved, the more persuasive you're going to be. Understand that 80% of all human motivation is optically stimulated. Think about it. Logs burning in a fire, those noises of leaping flames, we are drawn to that, just like a good visual aid. And a good visual aid grabs people's attention, becomes meaningful, memorable, and it activates their senses. And what can you use as a visual aid? You can use yourself. You're on stage. Anything you do, you are a visual aid. You can use objects, props, handouts, photos, videos, DVDs, flip charts, overheads. Wow. All these different things you can use. The challenge is most people don't use enough or they use way too many visual aids. I would never use more than one visual aid every 2 minutes, and that includes PowerPoint. Don't overwhelm them with too many visual aids. And the numbers show that visual aids increase your persuasiveness by over 40%. Now, you know visual aids are important. Let's talk about some of the blunders. The first one I already mentioned, too many or too little. You need to keep them out of sight until you use them, or it's going to distract your audience. They need to be large enough to be seen. No one hates to squint and try to see what you're showing. And that includes the font size of any type of transparency or PowerPoint. You need to make sure the font size is large enough to be seen at the back of the room, at least something larger than 24 point. Never pass around your visual aids until you are done because it'll distract from your message. Hold it where everyone can see it. And if you can get a visual aid that moves, it's worth 10 that don't. Don't stare at the visual aid while you talk. Don't read the visual aid. And make sure you practice using the visual aid before you actually do. Recap. Visual aids increase your persuasiveness, your credibility, the comprehension, and keeps your audience's attention. One last side note on visual aids is color. As I research color and persuasion, it's amazing the correlation has between color and your ability to persuade. Color accounts for 60% of the acceptance or rejection of an object or person, and that includes your visual aids. As I show different colors up on a screen in a seminar setting, it's amazing the different feelings of different colors will trigger. For example, have you knew that yellow is known as the fast color? It is the first color to register in the brain. If I show you all these different colors, yellow is the first one to pick out. Why do you think fire trucks and fire hydrants are changing colors? But then on the flip side, it's the first color to annoy you if you see it too long. What about in Seattle when people were fighting in the holding cells of prison and they painted them pink? Well, except for the floor and the roof. Many inmates at this stage of confinement were hostile and violent when it wasn't painted pink. They painted it pink and it started to have a calming effect on prisoners. The colors you're using, do they clash? Do they repel? Do they go well together? See, what color does is it draws attention to a certain point on the screen. It can emphasize a single point on a visual. It can make the point more vivid. And understand that people look at the brightest colors first. You can use them as association triggers. Red for go, green for stop. Or if you want to do it right, green for go, red for stop. They can suggest mood. Orange is used for good news many times. And we could spend all day on colors, but understand to build to a climax, start with the darker shades and work up to the lighter ones at the end of the presentation. Color matters. You need to think about that. Every aspect of your presentation matters, even the colors. The next thing that you need to think about ahead of time, as we talked about previously, is your questions. You need to be able to ask questions throughout your presentation that creates that involvement with your audience. Every time you ask a question, it gets answered, either out loud or mentally. This is how we're programmed. When you put questions throughout your presentations, questions that trigger a yes response. And on a side note, never throughout your persuasive presentation do you want to get a no from your audience. The more yeses you get throughout your presentation, the easier it is to say yes at the end of your presentation and say yes to what you want them to do. Because questions create mental involvement, they guide the presentation, they generate the responses that you want. Questions keep control in your court. So of all the tools in the persuasion toolbox, questioning is probably one of the most often used by great presenters. Questions are used to set the pace, to determine beliefs and attitudes and values, and they often force you to slow down and find out what they need. When you ask the right question, it also shows your sincerity. Why is it that top presenters ask 3 times more questions than the average presenter? Questioning is a very diverse and useful tool. Even in negotiation, the studies show the difference between an average negotiator and a top negotiator is that they ask 2 to 3 times more questions, just like a persuader. And isn't it interesting that Larry Wilson found out in his studies that 4-year-olds ask 300 questions a day while the average college graduate only asks 20. You see, much like movement, questions elicit an automatic response from our brains. We automatically think of a response when asked a question. Even if we don't verbalize the answer, we think about it in our head. Most people want to be cooperative. We don't want to be considered rude if we don't answer the questions. In this way, a question simulates our thinking response. So that is a power tool, learning to ask questions throughout your entire presentation. The next thing we notice with great presenters and great persuaders is they know how to inoculate. Inoculation. Now, there's an interesting term. Inoculation comes from the medical field, which you get a shot, an injection, of the weak form of the virus so your body can build up immunities to fight off the strong virus. Great presenters solve objections before they happen. Now, you hear objections indicate interest. Objections are good, but when you're working with a whole group of people, especially, they're stuck on the objection while you keep moving on with your presentation. So you're moving forward, and they're stuck way behind because you hit an objection you didn't solve. So you need to anticipate all objections. You need to anticipate resistance. If you know someone's going to come in after you and give a presentation and tell them that your product is the most expensive, you need to inoculate against that. You say, I just want to let you know that we are the most expensive in the market. We are the top of the line, and this is why. This product lasts 5 years longer. It's 50% less to operate. And when you get all the savings from fewer service calls, and it lasts 5 years longer, it actually is a very economical purchase. Although with inoculation, you don't want to give all the ammunition from the other side in a persuasive message. You have to prepare your audience for what they're going to hear. The sting of your opponent's words, logic, or testimony might be too much for them to handle and switch sides. It's like the attorney that says, hey, they're going to call my client mean, ugly, and a bad member of society. And that's true. But that's not why he's on trial today. So if the other side says any of those negative terms, there is no sting. Or if you know your son or daughter is going to be approached by a drug dealer, you need to inoculate them. You need to prepare them that drug dealer is going to call them stupid, say, hey, try it for free. Hey, are you chicken? And if you've never prepared them for that, there might be devastating consequences. But if you prepared them for that, they've been inoculated, they know that they're just trying to make them feel stupid, and it's much easier for them to walk away. So, when do you use inoculation? The correct answer depends on the composition and attitude of your audience. If they already agree with your position, you only need to present one side. If they disagree, you need to present both sides. Inoculation increases your credibility and your ability to persuade. You're showing both sides. You show the audience that you know how they feel and think, that you're not afraid of the truth and have done your research. And you prepare them about negative things someone could say about you or your product. This is great respect and power when you answer someone's questions before they even ask or even think about them. When you really know your audience, you can prepare them for pending attacks, and you can answer those attacks with questions and inoculation. And what that does, it gives them a solution in their minds when that question comes up. Another aspect why you design your message is that you gather your evidence. Now, a few pointers on evidence. Make sure that evidence is supported by someone that's independent, an independent expert. You let them know where it came from. You don't say something like, well, I found somewhere, or I've seen this somewhere. I found this on the internet. Make sure there's support by an independent expert. If you use testimonials for evidence, make sure you document those testimonials. Understand that new information they've never heard before is more convincing than old information they've already heard. And you can always build credibility by acknowledging the other side of the argument. We've talked about that, inoculation. Some other interesting things about evidence is by using the word fact, when you're revealing evidence, actually increases its credibility. Make sure that evidence is verifiable, that it's specific to what you need, and that it's unbiased. If you say something like, yeah, we interviewed the university football teams and they felt that the university gymnastics was a waste of time. Or, we took a poll in Washington, D.C. and they felt that term limits was a bad thing. Those are biased things and they aren't very persuasive. Understand also that personal experience is more persuasive than not having any experience at all. And evidence is going to be critical during a persuasive presentation when your audience is unfamiliar with your topic. If it's something they've never thought about before, and they really have not given it any thought. The more intellectual your audience, the more evidence and logic you're going to want to use. If they are less educated, you want to use more emotions, but you always need to have a balance of both. Now, we talked about making the evidence verifiable and unbiased, but also if you're going to reveal someone's name who said something, a quote, if you could talk about their qualifications, that also increases the power of the evidence. And evidence is always more persuasive when you confirm an audience's belief or when you resonate with something the audience already believes in. So when you look at evidence, make sure it's selective, that it's precise, powerful, and easy to understand. You don't want to make this complex because when persuasion comprehension studies are done, what we're finding is 97%, yes, 97% of people misunderstood some part of every message they saw. Simple is more persuasive than complex. People will not raise their hands and say they didn't understand. People do not want to feel stupid. Keep it simple. Keep it easy. Now remember, 97% misunderstood some part of every message they saw. A few other pointers. When you are assigned a topic, or you know your topic, you've heard the term brainstorming. And this is critical before the preparation of your message. You know, brainstorming is a way of generating ideas by using free associations of words and ideas. Most people try to say too much too soon. You want to narrow it down as much as possible to find that specific purpose. And you should be able to say in one sentence what you're going to say during a one-hour presentation. Period. You need to think ahead of time. You need to start sculpting your idea down to that masterpiece. Let me reiterate that. Whether your speech is 3 days or 1 hour, you should be able to come up with a statement, not a question, a statement, one sentence, what it's going to be about. You don't want to be vague or too general. And ask yourself, can I accomplish this in the time allotted? Is this going to be relevant to my audience? Can I create an introduction? A what's in it for me, a why should I care, in the first couple of minutes with this specific statement. Is it too trivial for them? Is it too technical for them? What supporting materials can I use? You're doing this ahead of time. I know a lot of people roll their eyes when we talk about preparation, but this is the mark of a great presenter. They are prepared and it shows. They've even worked on their connectives. What's a connective? Well, it's usually a word or a phrase that connects ideas throughout your presentation. This also could be called a transition. A transition lets your audience know you're moving from one thing to another. Because if you don't have a set transition, you're going to start using vocal fillers like we talked about. The second idea, now let us go to. So much for the present, what about the future? Now that we've spent some time doing this. And finally, let's talk about, those are all connectives and transitions. You do those ahead of time. Because remember, the way your brain works, you think in sections and segments, and you need to have transitions between those connectives that make it flow seamlessly. Another part of the preparation is your title. They should look at the title of your presentation and go, wow, I need to learn about that. I need to watch that. I need to come listen to that. Because your title is going to stress the benefits. It's going to tell them the results. It's going to give them the what's in it for me. It's going to give them a tangible goal. It might even contain a little element of mystery or stimulate imagination. but it needs to be something that really gets them excited, gets you remembered, and it might even be a catchy phrase or something that has a familiar ring to it. This is similar to book titles. A book title is more important than the content. Things like Chicken Soup for the Soul, wow, or 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, or Leadership Secrets of Attila Hahn, or 10 Common Persuasion Blunders That's Costing You $100,000 a Year. A little intrigue, a little suspense, people want to know more. Spend time on your title. Spend time on that one sentence that can explain to everybody what your 1-2-hour presentation is going to talk about. Part of your preparation also includes not giving the audience the whole meal. This is what I mean. A lot of persuasive presentations do a data dump. They talk about so much information. If you're trying to persuade them to do something, you just want to give them a small taste of the meal, a little small taste of the pie, so they want more. What can you say that will compel them to buy? What can you say that will persuade them? And a hard lesson for many presenters is that when you communicate to an audience, one-on-one or a large group, communication is irreversible. You can't take it back. Whether it was intentional or not, you can't take it back. And I know there's many times in your life where you wish you shouldn't have said that. You can't erase your words. They will always be remembered. It's impossible not to communicate. Even if you're sitting there looking bored, you're communicating. Facial expressions, movements, and other nonverbal behaviors mean that although we can stop talking, we can't stop communicating. So let me spend a few minutes on some things to really think about before your presentation. What excites you? What does your audience want to learn about? What is your general purpose? Can you do it in the time allotted? What exactly do you want to accomplish with this presentation? Can you support what you want them to do? Is it relevant to your audience? That's a big piece. Is it relevant? Selling life insurance to junior high school kids might not be relevant. Why are they there? Do they have to be there? Do they want to be there? Who's the sponsoring organization? What do they know about your speech or your topic? Can you tie your subject in with their goals and their values and interests? Is it too trivial, too technical? Does it fit the setting? I want to let you know as you think about this, that speaking to one person versus 200 people, you give it your all. You never prejudge. One person deserves just as much of your effort as 500 people. And just a reminder, don't have more than 3 to 5 points. It's the rule of three. Most messages should contain only 3 points because that's what people remember. Here's the brutal facts. They're going to only remember, a week later, they're only going to remember 10% of what you said. What 10% do you really want them to take with them? And it's usually the emotional impact of your message they take with them instead of the logical impact. They don't want a shopping list or the 101 ways to do different things. Just a couple of points. And during your preparation, you have to ask yourself, what is your main purpose? Can you measure the results? Does your audience really believe they can do it? Is it relevant to what they want? And as I ask the audience if they like the presentation or not, a couple of things keep coming up time and time again. Let me share them with you. It was easy to understand. I felt like they were talking to me. It was interesting. I was riveted. They kept my attention the whole time. I had no idea I was there for an hour. It only seemed like 15 minutes. I can't say this enough, that the quality of your speech is in direct proportion of your preparation. Your goal is to explode the subject, to look at the issues, to define your subject, and make your audience want more, to be able to persuade them. And one thing that might help you is to think of your presentation in scenes, just like if you were organizing an actual movie. What do you want to happen first? What do you want to happen second? And that's what's so fun about PowerPoint is you can move slides around. You can brainstorm, write things down, move them around, and put them in the order that you want. And keeping their attention is critical at this point. I would say every 20 minutes you want to change your presentation. You want to shift gears, meaning you might want to ask a question, use some audience involvement, use an audio, a video, a group exercise. How can you shift gears every 20 minutes to maintain their attention? Maybe they'll need a break, but every 20 minutes you want to shift a little bit so you can keep their attention. So a couple final points while we finish up the preparation for your perfect presentation is this. Rehearsal is everything. Practice in front of a mirror. Record yourself. You're not going to get a second chance. Practice your stories and humor on other people. Make a trip to the site. Visualize it. Practice it out loud. Do it using your visual aids. Do it using the PowerPoint. Doesn't matter if someone thinks you're strange. You need to prepare this. Lock yourself in the bathroom if you need to. Look in a mirror. One thing that works well for me is to print out your presentation and tape it on a wall so you're doing it while you're standing up. You can practice your arm movements. Polish it, refine it, do a dress rehearsal. Whatever works for you. Practice on friends. Practice on family. Whatever it is, true professional presenters understand their audience. They are prepared for the presentation, and they are so prepared that it rarely triggers fear.